You could be anywhere doing anything, but you're here with us. We appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Tacoma, S as in Seattle, M as in Mississippi. I'm joined by my main man, Kennedy Miller. Kennedy Miller, how you doing over there, my man?
Pretty good. What's going on, man?
Nothing too much. Nothing too much, man. Just, you know, make it out of here during the quarantine, you know. Let the folks know they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at CoachKen_TNBA. Again, CoachKen_, I'm drawing the name blank right here, TNBA. I'm not going to do the letters. I'm going to say, because we got a lot of good stuff coming up.
All right. All righty. We're just going to jump right into it now. So, Kennedy Miller, it's been a while since we've recorded the podcast, and we have not had a chance at all to talk about The Last Dance. You know, they've been running it Sunday night in and Sunday night out, two episodes per week. And we're coming up on the last two episodes this coming Sunday. So, Kennedy, coming off of the first eight episodes, what have just been your overall feelings of the series, and like, have your opinions of Michael Jordan changed any?
Well, you know, contrary to popular belief around the people that know me, I actually do like Michael Jordan. And one of the things that I like most about him are the stories. It's almost like they're myths, like folk legends, that, you know, things that they talked about it on there, how he used like fake things to motivate himself. You know, I've always loved that. And obviously he was a great basketball player. And so it's been very compelling. It's been something that I think most families are sitting down to watch, because there's no sports going on. They're saving that Sunday night to watch that Last Dance documentary. So it's been very cool to see how, you know, a lot of people's greatest player of all time, how he handled himself in that last year and then growing up, you know, in that era.
I think for me, like, one of the biggest things that, like, I think just things I've taken away from the series was, you know, I think coming into it, people said the motivation for Mike doing this documentary was, you know, post LeBron and Kyrie and those guys winning the championship in 2016, coming back from 3-1 against Golden State, Michael Jordan feels like he's been, you know, forgotten in a lot of ways, and how good, or, you know, rather how great he was. And I think for a lot of people, they just don't know. You know what I mean? So, like, for a lot of people, right, Michael Jordan is, like, the crying face meme. Right? And, you know, in the same way that a guy like O.J. Simpson, to a guy like me or you, is a dude who's, like, he's, like, a caricature. He's just a character, right? Some, like, sideshow character. And not the guy that my father grew up with, who was, you know, one of the greatest three or four running backs of all time. The guy who ran for 2,000 yards in 14 games. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And guy like Michael Jackson, who, you know, by 2002, 2003, he was the weird guy who was changing his face more times than Mr. Potato Head. He wasn't in, you know, a lot of younger people's eyes the guy who was, you know, the most famous person on the planet who made classic album after classic album. He wasn't that guy. He was just this kind of sideshow. Right. And so for a guy like Michael, right, Michael's like, yo, y'all need to remember this. Yo, I was this cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I think we do forget just how good Michael was, because, you know, let's say these kids that were born. I mean, I was born in 95. You were born in 97, right?
Yes, sir.
So I saw maybe the last year or so of, you know, Michael Jordan's career. You might remember, like, you, even less of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so for a lot of us, this is like a history lesson. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I've thoroughly enjoyed that part of it. You know, I wanted to ask you about, you know, Jerry Krause, general manager of the Chicago Bulls. That's a guy who I think gets painted out to be an antagonist a lot in this film.
Right.
Because he just couldn't, you know, he needed acknowledgement, validation, you know. But I think we all really, really forget how great that dude was at his job. You know what I mean?
Right. So, no, I mean, you know, the guy drafted Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and Horace Grant. Like, you don't stumble across, like, you can't get those guys without doing your due diligence. And, you know, we knew Michael was going to be good, but, you know, Scotty, you know, they talked about went to a small school, kind of, you know, started rising late. Later on process, he had hit a growth spurt. And so, like, you know, to get him and Horace in the same draft, man, like, no, Krause was really good at his job. And then, you know, people talk about the, you know, Scotty taking that deal, but the deal that was offered to him to give the Bulls that flexibility for so long with how little money Scotty was making. You know, I think Jerry does deserve some props. He does deserve some, you know, flack for how it all went down. But, yeah, Jerry was, he was a good GM. He was one of the best GMs back then because the Bulls really had, you know, obviously Mike was a great player, but you literally had the best player in the league with maybe the best perimeter defender in the league. And then in the second three-peat, you had the best rebounder in the league with him.
I think, like, some of the stuff with Krause is, like, really, really wild in some ways because you realize, because, like, he's been made out to be a villain when he's the guy who found Phil Jackson. He's the guy, you know, who ended up trading Charles Oakley and getting Bill Cartwright back. He found Scottie Pippen in Central Arkansas. Like, right. You know what I mean? Like, he took Phil Jackson from the CBA. Like, he's a dude who did all of those different things. But I think at a certain point, he thought, he felt disrespected by Michael and Scottie. And by the end of it, he thought, you know, I can do this again without any of these people, right? In which, you know, he was dead ass wrong because, like, in order to have that level of success and that 6 titles in 8 years, you know, 2 three-peats, that's only something you can do and have, like, an all-time great player. You know what I mean? And I think by the end of it, like, what they don't really cover very much in the documentary is how did Phil and Jerry Krause's relationship go south? Because Phil is the one that replaced Doug Collins. Like, and Phil wasn't very popular at first. Like, oh, this is Jerry's guy. This is Jerry's guy. You know what I'm saying? Guys weren't really rocking with Phil at first. But they never really go into the documentary and explain what happened with Jerry and Phil.
You know, I would think that obviously with what happens with a lot of dynasties, egos get involved. And so you even look at, you know, my favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones wanted a lot of credit. As he surely could have gotten some for the job that Jimmy Johnson did in Dallas. And Jimmy was like, you know, this is my team. I did this. And so I think it's a little bit of the same thing in Chicago with Jerry Krause and Phil. We just talked about how good of a job he did as a GM for them. So, I mean, he had to understand that his job isn't going to get a lot of recognition as the general manager because you're not the one selling Air Jordans and you're not the one walking up and down the sideline as the coach. So, you know, a lot of people aren't going to appreciate what you did, but, you know, like they say, like the real ones know, like, the real ones understand. And so that, I think, for me personally, that's what I think is their ultimate downfall is, like, just egos got involved of a great championship run that we might not ever see again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, by that last championship, like, it was legitimately time to, like, you know, break things up. You know, everybody was getting older. Everybody's best basketball was behind them. And, you know, the whole thing that, you know, Krause was trying to trade Pippen.
right,
you know, for what would have been Tracy McGrady, that mm-hmm. would have been the right move long term. You know what I mean? Because, yes. you know, after Scotty leaves at the end of 98, Scotty never makes another All-Star team.
Yep.
Right? Like, Crofts was ahead of the curve on that. Crofts was like, yeah, we got to get rid of Scotty. You know, Scotty isn't going to be, you know, what he's been. You know, and if Michael's leaving, probably after next year, we need to get what we can for Scotty now and try to make a move on this, right? And try to develop for the future. Tracy McGrady would have been a great play as a future development. Now, how he would have developed under Michael Jordan that last year, great potentially, and you know,
great course.
Is really interesting because we saw how they treated Tony Kukoc, because Kukoc was a Kraus guy, and Kukoc was really, really good, like one of the like early stretch four, stretch five guys that we see to now that are so prevalent,
right?
And Jordan and Pippen took Kukoc's lunch in that Dream Team summer. So, like, right. I can imagine how just verbally abusive Michael Jordan would have been to an 18-year-old fresh-faced Tracy McGrady. It's 1997.
Yeah, that, I mean, it was also that one, and then it was one I saw that, and I also read this in the George Karl book, but they were really close to trading Scotty to Seattle as well.
Oh, for Sean Kemp?
I believe so. I believe it was Sean Kemp and somebody else, but they were really close to making that deal as well. But I want to say Seattle might have gotten cold feet.
Hmm. See, that's the thing. Like, you know, and, you know, people have had, like, other discussions about, you know, would that Bulls team have won eight championships in a row if Michael would not have gone to go play baseball? And like you said, the answer to that question is no, because it is so difficult to like maintain that level of excellence and continued success year after year after year. Like, let's think about it. When was the last time we've seen a team three-peat, Kennedy? Like, that's I don't quite remember.
I was just about to say that point. It's been 20 years. We've seen a team three-peat.
The Kobe and Shaq Lakers, right?
Yes, sir.
The Kobe and Shaq Lakers are the last team to three-peat. Like, for the San Antonio Spurs, for as great as they've been over the last 30 years, really, San Antonio never repeated. You know what I mean?
They never even won back-to-back.
Yeah. Like, San Antonio's never able to win it back-to-back. Like, they won 99, 03, 05, 07, and 14. You know, but stayed in the mix throughout. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I think Houston probably wins in, you know, 94, 95, you know, in the same way for a lot of the same reasons that Toronto beat Golden State last year, just tired. Because Mike looked beat down at the end of that first three-peat.
Bro, you got to think, like, you just said it. Like, you just said how drained they look in that 98 season. Imagine having to go eight straight years of that. Like, it's not. Winning three in a row takes a toll on you. Like, it's tough. Like, it's been 20 years because there's so many factors that have to factor in. Was that Golden State team the best team in the NBA last year? Of yes. course. But injuries affected them. People want more money when you start winning. People think that they're worth more than what they actually are. Egos start getting involved. We already talked about that. So it's like to win three in a row and then to think that they're just going to win two more championships and then win three more championships. It's no way that's going to happen.
And like you said, health. Health is so important. Because like if we, you know, we think, go through the documentary, we just think about it. The Bulls never had a really, really catastrophic injury of any of their key guys. You know,
and then, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you got it. Go ahead.
No, a lot of people think like, oh, well, you know, even on documentary, kind of touched on a little bit. Oh, Mike was kind of out of shape. He didn't really look like himself, because most people forget Mike was in the league the second year that the Rockets won the championship. And so everybody's like, oh, well, Mike wasn't, you know, if he was Mike, they would have beat the Magic. I don't think they would have beat the Magic even if Mike was Mike, because they let Horace Grant go to Orlando. They signed Ron Harper, but they didn't have another big. They hadn't got Rodman yet. So either way, Rodman and Shaq were going to dominate on the boards. Oh, what happened next year? Oh, well, they signed Dennis Rodman. Oh, well, then the game totally changes. And so it's like, I don't care if Mike was Mike. Like, you have to have a great team full of selfless guys with a selfless organization to go to so many finals like that. You're playing an extra 20 games a year. You're hanging out with people from October to June. You're staying longer away from your families. Like, everybody ain't built for it. And that's what Mike was saying at the end. Everybody's not built to win.
You know what I was about to ask you? You said, sir. Everybody ain't built for what I mean. Like, what were your thoughts when you saw Mike just, you know, this is another way for me to put this, being verbally abusive towards his teammates?
Man, you know, like, for me, I don't know, maybe it's because I grew up in a different era, but, you know, like, those dudes were just kind of, like, taking it. And it's like, we grew up, we're like, we know old heads, you know, you go to the YMCA, every old head, like, act like they ain't gonna call you, like, the B word, like Mike was, but they're gonna be talking, you know, you grow up, you playing basketball, old heads gonna talk to you, they're gonna give you hard fouls, so it's kind of like, I'm used to it. But I guess it's refreshing for them because that's the person that introduced it to them. But for me, it was kind of like, oh, like, Mike ain't calling me the B word. I don't care. I don't care who he is. like, I don't care if you got to trade me. Bro, no, you're not finna just call me that and think it's okay. Like, you're not finna, well, what was the guy's name? Scott Burrell?
Yeah.
You're not going to badger me every day like he did Scott Burrell. And credit to him. He's a nice guy. But I would have slapped Mike Ballhead, bro.
You know,
I would have slapped him.
But you know,
I would have gave him.
You know, think with a guy like Mike though, a guy like Mike, like there was a bit of a power dynamic to where it was like, you know, you can't put your hands on Mike the franchise. You know what I mean? Like, they'll ship you out of here quick if you try to slap Mike or put hands on Mike. But it did seem like Mike was like, yo, if you talk back to him or, you know, you did what Steve Kerr did, he was like, okay, you got some fight. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it seemed like that's what Mike was trying to pull out of you, some fight. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. Now, is that, I typically believe one size fits all models don't work. You know, you have to kind of tailor your motivation or the way you kind of deal with people to kind of get the best out of them differently, depending on the person and their temperament.
Right.
And that wasn't what Mike was doing. Mike was like, yo, I know one way of doing this. You know what I mean? I know one way of trying to drag this out. And it seems like to me, and I may be wrong about this, Kobe Bryant seems like, when I was watching those clips of Mike, you know, talking, hollering at Scott Burrell, make a free throw. Make a free throw. Not again. And it was like this. We've heard these, you know, these wild stories about Kobe Bryant cussing his teammates out in practice.
Right.
Or throwing their Kobe's away. Or, you know, kind of, like, quite similar behavior. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like, I get it. You know, like I said, I grew up, like, you know, hearing these stories and stuff. So, like, it was just really cool to see. But also, like, at the end of the day, like, we grown men. Like, you're not just going to be talking to me like that every day. And that's the thing. Like, you know, they that story kind of came out that if Forrest Grant had a bad game, he would tell the flight attendant not to feed Horace. Excuse me? Like, if I'm Horace, like, it'd be one thing if I'm Steve Kerr and Shaq tells me I can't eat. Because, I mean, at the end, like, you know, it's Shaq.
I can't whoop this.
Right. It's a discrepancy. But if I'm Horace Grant, I'm 6'10", 250, 260. Ain't no way I'm letting some guy from North Carolina talk to me like I'm crazy and not let me eat like a slave. And they said the only person that he wouldn't do it to Scotty, but the only other person he wouldn't do it to was Charles Oakley. And we know why. We know why. Because he would have got them hands put on him.
Hey, man, Charles Oakley, like, I ain't going front, man. Like, that's a dude who, you know, he's like, he's reached Jay Prince levels of, like, myth. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, bro, they told a story about the time Charles Oakley slapped Charles Barkley in an NBA PA union meeting. And, like, right. Charles Barkley denies it, but everybody else that was there is like, yeah, Charles got slapped. Charles Barkley got slapped.
Another thing, Alex, that I thought was interesting. Growing up, especially being a LeBron fan, the narrative always gets LeBron's too much of a nice guy. He hangs out with his opponents off the court. He's too friendly. And yes, LeBron is very friendly. I'll concede that. But what I never thought I'd see, especially on a documentary for Michael Jordan, is he and Danny Ainge go to the golf course after losing game one of the playoffs against them. I never thought I'd see that. I never, because they told me, oh, Kobe Bryant, he's too competitive. Michael Jordan, he's too competitive. He doesn't want to talk to his opponent. He doesn't want to see him. He just wants to beat him. Well, after a loss, y'all go golfing. I was genuinely surprised by that because I had never heard that before. I knew him and Patrick Ewing were friends. I knew they kind of hung out. But I didn't know during a playoff series that he went with Danny Ainge after losing a game to the golf course.
I would say, like, a lot of people make that argument are Michael and them never did those sorts of things. And, you know, they would never. Michael wouldn't want to team up with those guys. He would want to beat them. Well, there's also, right. If we think about it, there was also much less mediums of communication, right? So before,
yes.
Like, it was just a house phone.
Right.
Now, we have Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever, whatever. Like, there are ways to get more in contact with people in the world is much, you know, smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So while those guys didn't hang out, while those guys weren't as friendly, where there weren't as many avenues or venues for them to become friendly.
Right.
A guy like LeBron, Carmelo, D-Wade, they got friendly, you know, really, really early, really, really young. A lot of these guys we see coming into the league now from each other since they were 14, 15 years old.
Right.
So it's, you know, there are a lot of generational differences and, you know, evolutions in communication have a lot to do with that in why the guys are so much cooler with each other. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we got to go to break real quick. Kennedy Miller, you got to stop arguing with these old folks like about stuff like this on Facebook, man. You have to stop. Because I saw this like 2 weeks ago. You got an argument with those old, with the men of New Faith Church about that point, about Danny Ainge and Michael Jordan. And you got to stop arguing with those old men, Kennedy. They gonna take you up about the choir.
My last point, I'll say this. The greatest thing about Michael Jordan is the fear that he put in everybody else. Nobody else after him has put Kobe is close, but nobody else after him has put fear into other grown men playing the same sport that Michael Jordan did for them. Charles Barkley said, yeah, we lost the championship, but I'm okay with losing to Michael Jordan. It almost seemed like half the time these dudes knew they were gonna lose walking on the court. You know, they got all these stories. Don't say nothing to Mike. Don't say nothing to him. Don't rile him up, cause he's gonna go for 50 tonight. Like let's just have a good game. Let's let him get 30 or something. Like, it was amazing to me seeing all these grown men talk about like how fearful they were. They didn't want to say anything to him. They didn't want to, you know, step on his toes because he was gonna go crazy on him. That I think is the greatest quality that Michael Jordan had, putting the fear into other. He had grown men calling him Black Jesus. Come on now. I would never. Overall, I'm really sad that this is the last two episodes coming up this Sunday, because it's really been a great documentary. I enjoy sitting on the couch at 8 o'clock every Sunday night and watching this. I wish they had more episodes, man. This has been great.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have to leave it right there, but we will be back with more of the Game Plan Podcast on the other side of the break. And coming up next, we're going to talk about Dak Prescott, a potential holdout, and why I think he shouldn't show up to work. All that and more on the other side of the break. This is the Game Plan Podcast. Don't go anywhere.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. Got a girl named Mika in Chicago. Another one named Patrice in Toronto. Little mama named Nana up in Utah. Got a girl named Maria down in New York. I told her, give me something good.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That is T as in Tony, S as in Sam, M as in Michael. Follow the show on Twitter at GamePlanTSM. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter, my man?
Find me on Twitter at CoachKen_TNBA. Again, CoachKen_ T as in Toronto, N as in New Jersey, B as in Brooklyn, A as in Atlanta.
All right. All right. Switching gears from the NBA to the NFL and your Dallas Cowboys, Kitty Miller. We have not talked about you guys in quite a while.
Yes, sir.
Because quite frankly, we ain't had reason to. They were sorry last year.
You didn't have to say that.
I just did that to bother you.
That's a low blow, Alex.
I know it was.
That's a low blow.
But
go ahead.
Something you were actually like dead on right about, Kitty Miller, and I ain't gonna lie, I was on the fence about this guy. I've been on the fence on him for years. Dak Prescott. Kitty Miller, you were telling me Dak Prescott is the man, $50,000. And last year, had a doggone great season, threw for 5,000 yards, the whole nine. Right? And now Dak wants a new contract.
Mm-hmm.
The Dallas Cowboys have given him the franchise tag, and they have until July the 15th to get a long-term deal settled. After that, they cannot renegotiate or try to negotiate a long-term agreement until, so, next January, essentially. So, Kennedy Miller, do you think Dak will end up showing up for training camp in the whole nine yards under the franchise tag?
I think he'll end up showing up. I don't think there's been any indication that shows that Dak will not show up, because he's shown the past, 3 years it's been now, 3 or 4 years, that he's going to be the guy that's there. He's always going to, try and say the right things in the media. This is kind of the first time that he might be kind of painted in the wrong light, as far as like holding out, trying to get the money. I understand it. But some people will say that he might be selfish for trying to get it, but I think he's still going to be there. I think he's still going to try and lead the team by example and showing up for OTAs and training camp.
I'm going to tell you this. If I was Dak Prescott, I wouldn't be showing up at all. Because
gotcha. Tell me why.
All right, so Dak Prescott wants his money. The Dallas Cowboys do not seem to particularly want to give him his money. And like we've talked about many times before on this show, in just me and you, just like, in our regular text message conversations, that a great quarterback is hard to come by, but so is a decent quarterback. You know what I mean? And Dak Prescott is somewhere in the middle between, competent and great. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
And finding those guys in Dak Prescott's league are hard to find, too. And so once you get a guy that's competent or better, you have to keep them. Because at that point, your opportunity to get somebody that's on that level or better is extremely, extremely low. Right? Like, this isn't like you're replacing outside backer. This isn't like you're replacing a corner. This isn't replacing, a tight end. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
This is the most important position in American sports, quarterback. And there are a shortage of decent ones. A shortage. And so if you're decent or better, as Dak Prescott has proven himself to be over the last couple of years, you have to get compensated accordingly. And, Dak Prescott wants a 4-year deal. The Cowboys wanted him to take a 5-year deal. The Cowboys offer apparently is for $35 million a year for 5 years with $106 guaranteed. Which would tie Russell Wilson as the highest paid NFL player. And Dak's like, I want a 4-year deal. And, if Dak really wants what he wants and wants a shorter contract, because the TV money's about to, pop up a little bit more, and the TV deals and all that stuff are about to expire, and they're going to have a 17th game, Dak should sit at the crib. Be willing to sit at home for training camp, or potentially into the season, because how else will they really take you seriously unless you're willing to actually sit there and not go? Because, a lot of guys will sit out training camp. They say they fine you every day you miss. They waive those fines at the end, man. Ezekiel Elliott didn't have to pay a fine for not showing up to training camp. Like, they waived it at the end. And if you're the Cowboys, what you going to do if he don't show up? Like, if Dak Prescott does not show up to work, what happens?
They got to roll with Andy Dalton till he gets there.
Are you willing to roll with Andy Dalton, Kennedy Miller?
Absolutely not. Do I like Andy Dalton as a backup? I love Andy Dalton as a backup. I think he's one of the best backups in the league. But No, I don't. I'm not thrilled with the idea of Andy Dalton being in training camp, possibly starting the season as the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys.
I mean, because, you know, they went out and got CeeDee Lamb, right? Mm-hmm. And a small part of me thinks that's because the Cowboys just want to bolster up the offense just in case there are some issues with Dak, or if Dak doesn't want to show up there, you know, problems of the sort. Mm-hmm. And right. I also tend to think that the reason the Cowboys don't want to give Dak Prescott his money is because they view Dak Prescott as a piece in the machine. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't think Dak Prescott is critical to the machine. They just think he's another piece, right? And so why should I pay a regular piece more than I would pay anyone else? Because those first 2 or 3 years, I want to say, this whole offense was built around Ezekiel Elliott. Elliott was the engine. And as things have progressed, they've gone away from Elliott a lot more, and they've started throwing the ball. But they're still handling Dak, even though he's had an increased role, like they would handle him like he was. This was 2016 or 2017 in his first year.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's why I think this part of them is like, yo, you aren't our best player. Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones may kind of feel like, you know, you wouldn't be this without Ezekiel Elliott.
But I mean, like you said, like, They gotta pay the man, because first of all, he's exceeded your expectations of what you envisioned for a fourth round pick. Like, I don't even think they could imagine drafting Dak in the fourth round would lead to the progress that he's shown in this. He's played every game. I want to say he's like 62 for 62, started every game for them over the past couple of years. He's progressed every year, you could say. Now, you could say the team has kind of went up and down, but I would say that, you know, last year was the best version that we saw of Dak, even though that it wasn't the best version of the Dallas Cowboys. But, you know, he hasn't gotten in trouble off the field, says the right thing. You know, I think it's his time now, and I don't think he's wrong for asking for what the market is offering him. I don't understand why he has to wait so long, or why they have to try and work, or he has to try and give the Cowboys a discount. I mean, you know, they're not going to hesitate, and I know he's not on the same level as these guys, but Kansas City's not going to hesitate to give Pat Mahomes a deal. Houston's not going to hesitate to give Deshaun Watson a deal. The Rams didn't hesitate that long to give Jared Goff a deal. So why would Dak Prescott has got to be all this standoff? Oh, well, he's the Cowboys quarterback, and he's going to be making a lot of money off the field as well. It ain't about that. They ain't hesitate to give Tony Romo a deal. He got as many playoff wins as Tony Romo had for his whole career.
I never thought about that. Two.
Like, I mean, that's it. I mean, it's the truth. With Dak, it's like they're coming out and they're like, oh, well, he should take this discount. He should do this. He needs, like, it's going to – salary is going to, you know, be a hold on our salary cap. Dude, this is more than what you asked him to be. You drafted him to be a backup quarterback. He came in and started 1-2 divisions for you, won a playoff game, and now when it's his time, when his contract is up, you could have re-signed him at any point, but now when his contract is up, you want to say, oh, well, take a discount. No, man, I'm going to try and get as much money as I can.
I think, like, in not to, like, segue back to The Last Dance, right? Like, it's almost like when Scottie Pippen was like, yo, I need security.
Right.
Like, long, long, long-term security. You know, and that ended up, his deal ended up being undervalued quite quickly after they signed it. Dak Prescott's going in the opposite way. He's like, all right, yo, I know this TV money is going to explode here pretty soon. I know everybody's going to sign new deals. We're going to have a 17th game probably in 2022 or 2023. So it would behoove me to sign a shorter deal to get more money later on the back end. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I was going to say, with the Dallas Cowboys, what they run the risk of doing is, if they don't get a deal done by July the 15th, right, then they're going to end up having to do this all again next year.
Right.
Right? And because they're going to end up tagging him again. You know what I mean? And then if we saw this happen with Kirk Cousins, you tag a, once you tag a guy twice, you can't tag him a third time. Either you get a deal done, you know, after you've tagged him the second time, or they leave. And can the Dallas Cowboys afford for him to leave, right? Because you've got a roster that's built essentially to win today. You paid Ezekiel Elliott a lot of money. You paid Amari Cooper a lot of money, even though, you know, I was kind of hesitant, or I would have been hesitant to pay Amari Cooper a ton of money, given kind of the way things shook out at the end of the year. You know, you've invested in Jalen Smith. You've invested in Lyle Collins. You've invested in Tyron Smith. You invested in all of these guys. You don't have time to, you know, tag Dak Prescott twice and Dak Prescott leaves for nothing, and then you have to start over with a new guy at quarterback and he has to try to show up on a win-now football team and try to win?
Makes no sense, Alex.
Yeah, because we saw what happened to the Redskins once Kirk Cousins left. Like, now, mind you, they weren't a great football team with him there, but they were a 7-8 win ball club.
Mm-hmm.
Where have they been the last 2 years?
Nowhere. Not even close. And the thing is, really, I feel like their window, you know, I feel like they still have a slight window left, but I feel like it was last year. Like, I mean, you think, like, teams are winning now where guys are quarterbacks are still on rookie deals. They get a bunch of talent around them. I mean, look at the Rams. They made a Super Bowl, didn't win it. Now they're running out now that they paid Jared Goff. Now they got to start letting guys go. The Seattle Seahawks might have been the best version of that model. They went to two Super Bowls, probably should have won both, but surrounded Russell Wilson with so much talent, he didn't have to do as much. Now we've seen Russell Wilson become an elite quarterback, but at that point, he wasn't. I wouldn't say that he was an elite quarterback when they were going to back-to-back Super Bowls. They had a historically great defense and a great running game, and they had a bunch of talent around them. And that's what you do when quarterbacks are on these rookie deals. But now they're running out of time. They're already starting to lose people. You talked about the people they re-signed. They lost Byron Jones. They're about to either have to start coming to, you know, because honestly, the Cowboys, they have a really good team. They've drafted well this last decade. They've really drafted really well. And you could probably say, like, we might have missed on Randy Gregory because of the marijuana, and we definitely missed on Taco Charlton, punk ass. But
say with your chest, Henry.
Other than that, we've drafted pretty well where guys have turned into quality starters, and so you know now you got guys coming up like Xavier Woods and Tadobia Awuzie that are going to need contracts soon. You paid Jalen Smith, you're gonna have to pay Leighton Vander Esch too. And these are things that, like, if they could have extended, they should have extended Dak a long time ago. But they, I don't, like you said, Jerry Jones believes he's a piece of the puzzle. I don't think they were quite sold on him yet. And so they didn't want to do it, and now they're going to put themselves in a hole. And if they don't win this year, then it's going to be really tough. I think the window might have been shut for that team.
And, you know, I think that should be one of the most, like, glaring indictments of Jerry Jones's, you know, tenure as owner of this football team. That over the past 10 or 11 years, he let the primes of Tony Romo, Jason Witten, Ezekiel Elliott, Dez Bryant, and probably Dak Prescott, and that massive offensive line go to
never
waste.
Even touched a Super Bowl.
Let alone a conference title game. We're going to leave it right. You all right? You all right? You need a moment.
You didn't have to bring that up, Alex. Jesus, man.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just stating facts.
Go ahead. Let's go to break.
We're going to give Kitty a minute to compose himself, but we will be right back. We're going to have a discussion about something I know Kennedy wants to talk all about. The GOAT conversation. LeBron versus MJ.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about it all. We're going to get all into it on the other side of the break. This is the Game Plan Podcast. Don't go nowhere.
Yeah. Somebody hit me today and I'm like, Nah, just make sure, you know, you tell me what to do when I get there, you know. I said I respect you. No problem. I got all these blessings just to give it to others anyway. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. My hand's always open. For real. Hey, 33 years I gave that to the game. 33 mil, I say that for the rain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my government name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Getting it on Twitter, Alex Goodwin TSM. Follow the show on Twitter, Game Plan TSM. That's T as in Tony Parker, S as in Sam Mitchell, M as in Manu, Ginobili. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at CoachKen_TNBA. Again, CoachKen_T as in Tim Duncan, N as in Nate Archibald, B as in Bernard King, A as in Artis Gilmore.
All right, And moving on to our final segment and topic of the program. We're talking about The Last Dance in the opening segment here of the show. And one of the things we did not get to that's been raging on social media in the past 4 or 5 weeks has been the GOAT conversation. Is it LeBron? Is it Michael? And Kennedy Miller, you have been on social media, as you always are on social media, stirring the pot with folks day in, day out.
I love it.
Like Kennedy Miller, you be having the internet going nuts.
I love it.
So
it's one of the things I love to do.
So, you know, lay out your, I guess you could say, argument for LeBron being the greatest of all time. You know, I don't necessarily say I have a rebuttal, but it's more of a, like, let's take a step back and let's look at this a little bit. So,
right.
The floor is yours, Kennedy Miller. Let's go.
I think LeBron is just the, for a guy to come out at 18 years old and to have such expectations and to live up to them in a way that nobody else has ever seen before. Like, I mean, honestly, like, let's think about how many number one overall picks actually translate to be like all time great. Like LeBron and Tim Duncan are like by far the two best of the last 20 years, 25 years. If you want to go 30 years, you can go Shaq. But it's really crazy how many number one picks just turn out to be like really good role players, don't turn out to be good players at all. But for LeBron to be the number one pick at 18, be in the finals by what, 21, 22, the only knock on him is his finals record.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, like, we've seen three different versions of what, in, you know, people's opinion is the best version of LeBron. Like, which year would you say was, like, the best LeBron year or the best version of LeBron?
Oh, man. Like, 07, 08 LeBron, what happened in Detroit, you know, in Game 6. And that series was one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life. Miami LeBron, like fully 24, 25-year-old LeBron, finally becoming a winner. That was like something special, I would say, which culminated in 2016. And I would say, I think in 2017, LeBron scored 28, averaged 8 rebounds and 8 assists, and shot 55% from the field and 36% from the three-point line, and nobody noticed. Like, he wasn't even in the MVP conversation at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think maybe that LeBron, maybe.
And see, that's the thing. Like, you can have an argument for three different years from, you know, you can go 09 LeBron, you talked about, you can go 2013, that Miami LeBron, where they won 27 straight games, and he probably should have won Defensive Player of the Year as well. They gave it to Marc Gasol.
or the 2017 or 2018 LeBron when he put up 50 the first game against the Warriors. And so my thing is, like, it's so, like, he's done so much in the league that, you know, if you're trying to diminish him, you just go by, oh, well, he, you know, he's 3 and whatever in the finals, or he, you know, he's not a clutch guy, which is absolutely insane. But I think he's just a better all-around basketball player. And Charles Barkley said it best a couple of years ago. I want to say I was in high school, and he said, he was like, you know, back then Michael Jordan was a prototypical NBA body that you wanted to have. 6'6", 220, big hands, long arms, can run, can jump with anybody. LeBron can do the same thing. He's 6'8", 250, 260. And, you know, like all the older generation, oh, he's too soft, he does, like, he flops like that. It's because of the generation that he's in. Like, I mean, he flops not to say that he's soft, but it's exaggerating to try and get a call, whereas back then they knew they weren't going to get a call, so they were going to be physical. Well, you can't say that, oh, well, he can't play in this league because he's just adapting to how this league is played. But let's remember, they changed hand-checking in 05.
Yeah.
LeBron was averaging 20 in 04 with hand-checking. So it's not unfair to say that LeBron can't play in that era. Also, I think a knock against Mike, and I tried to say this the other day, and old heads got mad at me again. The league was watered down in the 90s. It was. It was six expansion teams. It was six expansion teams that took place in the 90s. The Magic, the Timberwolves, the Raptors, the Grizzlies. All these teams came. And people get it mistaken. I'm not saying the 80s. I'm not saying Magic and Larry Bird. I'm saying the 90s. After 1990, the league was watered down. This league that LeBron is dominating and has been dominating for a decade is deeper than maybe we've ever seen. Go ahead.
So I think the biggest, I would say, issue between, like, the LeBron Michael Jordan argument is that people legitimately do not, we don't operationalize what we mean by greatest of all time, right? So does greatest of all time mean most skilled, or does it mean most accomplished, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, right? Because if we're talking about most skilled, or, like, more technically sound basketball player, I think LeBron is the more technically sound basketball player. The more, like, just the a better overall, all around basketball player, right?
Mm-hmm.
But LeBron will never be the winner, and he will never be as, you know, accomplished as Michael Jordan is. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that just won't happen at this point. You know what I mean? It just won't. So what do we mean? Like, how do we, what's the terms of engagement as far as what greatest of all time means? Because the greatest of all time means most accomplished and most celebrated and best winner. That's Michael Jordan, hands down, every day of the week. Right?
Right.
If it's most skilled, then LeBron has a much stronger argument. You know what I mean?
In a way, I also think it also comes with, you know, who does the media support? Because, I mean, if we're going by most accomplishments or all this, Kareem is up there as well. He's an all-time leader in points. He's won six championships. I'm sorry. He's won six championships. You look at a guy like Bill Russell, won 11 rings. Yeah, I mean, did he play against short white guys? Sure.
There were eight teams.
But, you know, it's unfair to, like, say, oh, well, you know, in this era, yada, yada. In his era, he did what he had to do.
Yeah.
He won 11 rings. And so, like, it's funny now how we just say, like, Mike is in a world of his own, and now that we bring LeBron in it, like, we just forget about these other guys. But I think when you try and talk to basketball, like, actual basketball players or, like, coaches or people like that, they try and throw the skill around, and if they're not pro LeBron, then they say, oh, well, LeBron's not that skilled because he just barrels it. He has no moves. He has no, you know, that's what, oh, what? Basketball Twitter thinks they've got it. LeBron has no moves. He has no bag. That's what they say. He's got no bag like Kevin Durant. He's got no bag like Kobe Bryant. He's got no bag. He just barrels his head down, and he's more athletic than guys, and so he scores. Alec, I don't understand how you are about to finish top three all-time in scoring with no moves. I just don't. Yeah, I mean, sure. Does he get points off dunks and running in transition? Sure. But, I mean, let's not act like the dude didn't have a season in Miami where he was shooting 38% from three on about four or five attempts a game.
Yeah.
Like, he's been incredibly efficient throughout his whole career. And when you talk about the winner, yeah, Mike's got him on the rings. I don't think LeBron is ever going to get six rings. And if he does, I think probably that last ring would have to come where he's not the best player on the team. And I think if you look other, if you take rings out of the category, I think LeBron is, I mean, he's been doing it for so long. I don't think Mike could have taken those Cleveland teams to the finals that he took. I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think Mike could have taken that 2018 Cavs roster. I don't think Mike could have taken that 2007 Cavs roster to the finals. Hmm. Now, would he have, I also think, to be fair, I think Mike would have beat that Dallas Mavericks team. I think he would have beat that Dallas Mavericks team. But I think every other final that LeBron lost, I think Mike would have lost with that same run.
I think LeBron's finals record is like his biggest, you could say, blemish, right? Because most of these other things have become these subjective, abstract things of LeBron's soft, or LeBron's too friendly, LeBron's, you know, things you really can't quantify or...
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's the thing.
Like it just becomes these subjective measures that people come up with when they're really just trying to achieve a means to an end.
Right.
But LeBron's finals record is like really the worst, you know, biggest knock on his resume. And it's not to say LeBron isn't an all-time great player or anything of the sort. It's like, yo, man. It's wild that a dude that great, that talented, who's been to the NBA Finals every year from 2011 to 2018, mm-hmm. only got three championships. And I was going to say, about a guy like LeBron or somebody of LeBron's ilk as a guy who stops people from getting championships, right?
Mm-hmm.
LeBron has been stopped from getting championships. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because we talk about, like, in Jordan's era, if Jordan wasn't around, Patrick Ewing would probably have a ring. Charles Barkley would have a ring. Gary Payton and Sean Kemp would have rings. Stockton and Malone would probably have rings. You know what I mean? Reggie Miller probably would have a ring. With a guy like LeBron, we're like, yo, if Steph Curry and those guys run around, LeBron would have more rings. You know what I mean? Like, it's much more, it's weird in that way that a guy that great has been denied in that way from championships. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So, okay, so there's a couple of points. The first point, when you were saying it's a bunch of cliches about how he's soft and stuff, it's hilarious because all of that has been proven false. Like, he doesn't show up in big games. He's not clutch. All that stuff. He leads. He averages 34 points a game in game 7. That's higher than anybody ever. Oh, he runs from the free throw line in big games. Really? Well, if I'm not mistaken, the Cavs were up by 3 against Golden State in a game 7, and LeBron went to a free throw line with less than 20 seconds left and won the game by hitting the free throw and putting them up by 4. Now, he didn't hit the shot. You know, I'm not saying it was this iconic thing, but he hit the free throw to make it a 2-possession game. And so when you talked about he wasn't stopping people from winning championships, Jordan, I would say Jordan's prime was probably 87 to 93-ish. I think, you know, he three-peated again. He three-peated again, but after that, I don't think he was prime Jordan. I think he was still better than 95% of the league. But I think 87 through 93 was his prime. And he won 3 championships. And the Pistons won 2. I would say LeBron's prime was 2011 to 2018. And in his prime, he won three championships, and two other teams won one as well. And so I think, like, at the, you know, they both came out differently. Mike went to college, obviously. LeBron didn't. But at the age of 31, they both had three championships and were at their prime. But the difference is when LeBron won his third championship, the second best player in the league joined the best team in the league.
You know what's crazy about that? About the Durant thing?
What?
Is that, you know, because people always make the argument, well, Durant, well, they got, you know, Golden State had to go get Durant to compete with LeBron or whatever the case happens to be. And I've always disagreed with that premise because going into, like, the All-Star break in 2016, you started hearing rumblings like, yo, Golden State going to make a run at KD. Like, so this wasn't, like, something that was like, yo, we lost and then we have to go get Kevin Durant. Like, no. That was a move they were angling to make with or without a championship. You know what I mean?
And no.
I was going to say, go ahead.
No, I was going to totally agree with you. Draymond Green said it like a month ago. He talked about it on the podcast. He first heard about the idea of them getting Kevin Durant after they won their first championship. Not even into the 73-9 year, but after they won the first championship, his agent was BJ Armstrong, came in with the salary cap book of all the teams and said, listen, if you can re-sign now and you can get the max, you can get $100 million, or you can take $82 million, and then he flipped the books to Oklahoma City's book, and you can have a chance to get this guy, and he's going to be a free agent next year. And he said, I'm going to take the $82 mil. Easy.
Yeah, it, like, and so, and I always also tell people this, like, about that Kevin Durant Golden State thing. Golden State needed that dude. And the reason I say they needed him, like, how does a 73-9 team need the second best player in the NBA? It's because Golden State did not have a second guy that can create their own shot outside of that system, right?
Right.
And you need as many shot creators as you possibly can have. Now, did they necessarily need to get as good of a shot creator as Kevin Durant? Probably not.
No.
Like, no. But if you have the chance to swap out Kevin Durant for Harrison Barnes, what you gonna do?
Right. And so that, you know, brings up the argument. I think that, you know, although the argument is LeBron played in the weak East for most of his career, sure. But I think that the teams that LeBron played in the finals were a lot better than the teams that Jordan played in the finals. If you go once we go back and look at that Spurs team, we say, well, they had Parker, Ginobili, Duncan.
Which Spurs team? You talking about 07 or 13 or 14?
We can go 07. That's three Hall of Famers. And that's probably, what, at the tail end of their primes?
Parker was going into his prime in 07. Parker and Ginobili were going into his prime.
Duncan was kind of probably his last one or two years before the end of his prime.
Yeah.
But then you go 14. You got Parker, Ginobili, Kawhi, Duncan. Like, once LeBron retires and it's 10 to 15 years and kids are going back and they're going to say, wait, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Russell Westbrook were all on one team? And he played them? Wait, he played Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green? He beat a 73-9 team? Like, I'm not trying to discredit any 90s teams. Like, I mean, they were good. But like I said, with league expansion, the drop off between your best player and your second best player and then your third best player was so major. Like, I mean, the Jazz had John Stockton, Karl Malone.
Yeah.
After that, yeah, they got, oh, Jeff Hornacek, Greg Ostertag.
They're
not Klay Thompson. They're not Draymond Green. Like these teams now have everybody's got a big three to compete.
Yeah,
everybody's got to have a solid third guy.
I would say about like NBA expansion. The thing is, like, while I do agree that like the basic premise that, you know, the league expansion did water down the NBA, right? This is also, as you know, there was also explosion in athleticism. You know what I mean?
Right.
And there was also, like, players are getting much better. You know what I'm saying? So we can, like, outfit more teams. You know what I mean? And, right. like, I think as we got to, like, those teams who were in, ended up in, like, the finals, like, those Seattle teams, they were ballers. You know what I'm saying? Those Utah right. teams had ballers on them. Like, those late 90s San Antonio teams with Duncan and Robinson and Elliott and Avery Johnson and Mario Elie and Steve Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I think Will Perdue was on that team, too. But, you know, had guys on it. You know what I mean? Or those Knicks teams with mm-hmm. Ewing and Latrell Sprewell and Starks and Mason and McDaniel. You got guys that, like, you know, as the competition, as we get to the cream of the crop, those teams were really, really deep. You know what I mean?
They were good teams. Like a rewatchable of the Knicks team of the Knicks against the Bulls mm-hmm. when Jordan played them in the playoffs. These guys were literally the Bulls were like they were like pressing the Knicks because they only had two competent ball handlers in Doc Rivers and John Starks. Like literally the rest of them dudes was there to foul you hard, except for Patrick Ewing.
And fight.
And fight. But they had, you know, they had their guards were like Doc Rivers, John Starks, and I think they had Greg Anthony.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, and even, you know, they I watched another one, they played the Suns when Jordan scored like 55 in the finals. Barkley was amazing. Kevin Johnson didn't show up for the, I mean, he didn't show up. And they had nobody, like you talk about the athleticism now. Spencer Dinwiddie tweeted, he was like, you know, Jordan back then was a freak. He was 6'6", 220 with like a 40-inch vertical.
He was like,
I'm 6'6", 220 with a 40-inch vertical. And I'm not athletic anymore in this league.
Spencer Dinwiddie said this.
Right, like, and that's the thing. Like, we always acknowledge in everything else that got better. But then, like, my, and that's what I'm saying. Like, Michael Jordan's agent comes out like, oh, that 45. Like, okay, like they're not hand checking, they're not physical. But I'm not throwing Dan Marley out to guard Michael Jordan. Like, he's not the physical freak he was back then. He's skilled. I'm not saying he'd be a bum. I'm not saying he wouldn't be a superstar. He'd probably be a top player in the league. But I think it's very disrespectful to say he's going to average 40 to 45 points a game. Yeah, James takes like 13 threes a game. Is Mike going to do that? I mean, if you tell me he's going to shoot 13 threes a game at the clip that James Harden does, sure, you can have it. But, yeah, he averaged 37 points a game in 1987, which many don't believe was the highest played pace still to this day. In 1987. It's, bro, the Pistons and the Nuggets went into a double overtime game. The score was like 187 to 183. Social media would lose its mind now if that happened.
That's like an all-star game score, for real.
Right, but Mike was great. He was skilled, but he was also the fastest and could jump the highest in the league. Now he going to have to go against Kevin Durant, Giannis, LeBron. Like, all these guys are physical freaks. And so, for these guys to say, oh, well, Mike will average 45 in this league, scoring 40 a night is tough. And if Mike is the killer that we all said he was, and he's going to guard the best player on the other team every night as well, I don't think that's happening.
You know, I was going to say, you know why a part of me thinks something like that could happen?
Why?
Because Mike would make up ways to motivate his damn self. LeBradford Smith, anybody?
Oh, my like, goodness.
Mike would come up with ways to be like...
Poor LeBradford.
Dog. He... I was a side note to anything. I did not think in like 1991, 1992, we'd hear somebody with the name LeBradford. I think
that's... I was thinking that too. I was like, somebody's grandfather now is named LeBradford.
And that's wild. Like, hey, grandpa's like 60. Like, you know, we got homeboys named LaMichael, JaMichael, DaMichael, Sedarius, or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This dude's name was LeBradford.
Grandfather stage.
Yeah, this dude's name was LeBradford in 1992, and he was 23.
That's wild.
Like, and he tore the Bradford Smith a new ass. Totally based on, like, he said, LeBradford Smith put her hand around Mike's shoulder. Like, good game, Mike. Good game, Mike. Or whatever the case happens to be. Come to find out that's Mike, something Mike made up just to rile himself up and play. Something tells me if Michael Jordan wanted to, he could score 40 a game just because in some weird, he'd do some Jedi mind trick on himself to get himself to a place to where he could.
Yeah, I mean, I just really think that's, I think it's really tough if he's going to have to go out and guard the other team's best perimeter player and go for 40 every night. Like, I think somebody said, and I agree wholeheartedly, especially if he's on a contender too. Now, if he's on a trash team, maybe. If he was on the Bulls now with the Bulls roster, yeah, he'd be a better Zach LaVine. Like, I mean, he'd be doing what Zach LaVine does, but better. But, you know, if he's on a really good team, I think he would average like 30 to 32. And if I say that, dudes act like it's just a crime that I said it.
Yeah, they were.
Like, that's really good.
Yeah, they were hollering at you. Like, it was blasphemy. Like
I said, Michael Jordan would average 30 to 32 on a championship team in 2020.
What? 30 to 32?
What do you want me to say?
Kenny Miller, like I told you, man, you got to stop arguing with these fools, man. You can't spend your time talking to some of these folks.
But then you got Michael Wilbon saying, neither LeBron nor Kevin Durant would dominate in the 90s back then, or the 80s. Excuse me, what? Like, how do we come to that conclusion? Somebody said Kevin Durant would come down the court, cross over Larry Bird, and pull up for a three, and they bring back slavery. Because of how bad he was doing it.
Oh, man. Yo, that's crazy, man. We got to leave it right there, dog. We about out of time. But, man, Kenny, my man, I appreciate you hanging out with me once again, man. Where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter for all the debates, all the discussions. CoachKen_TNBA. Again, CoachKen_T, as in Tony Outlaw. N as in Nate Robinson, B as in Brandon Knight, and A as in Anthony Hardaway.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's on Twitter. Alex Goodwin TSM. That is T as in Travis Outlaw. I'm not sure if you use that one. S.
I said Tony Outlaw.
Oh, all right. Ooh, good. S as in Sam Bowie. Ooh. M. As in Marshawn Brooks.
Oh, wow. Where is he now?
Man, I think he's in China somewhere playing for the Shanghai
Sharks.
Yeah,
he's got to be overseas.
Either way it goes, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you so much for joining us here on the Game Plan Podcast. For Kitty Miller, my name is Alex Goodwin, and we will see you guys next time.